It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show this week, will it be the podcast election? As broadcasters begin to announce their lineups, what will Ofcom do about Nigel Farage? Also on the programme, we're in Bristol for the Creative Cities Convention and hear reasons to be cheerful from broadcaster David Olusoga and Screen Skills Laura Mansfield. All that plus changes at Virgin Radio while Channel 4 is thinking beyond England, and in the media quiz, it's American imports and exports. That's all to come in this edition of The Media Podcast. In the news this week, Hugh Edwards has resigned from the BBC. The news comes 10 months after the newsreader was suspended over allegations of receiving inappropriate images of a young person. Police later found no evidence of criminal behaviour. The US Senate has passed a TikTok bill aimed at banning the app in the country unless owners ByteDance cede control within a year. This week, we also saw the EU ban TikTok Lite, which paid users to watch certain content. Will this shift the influence that China has in the West? I guess we have a year to find out. And ITV's director of television, Kevin Ligo, has surprised viewers by revealing that Mr. Bates versus the Post Office lost the network £1 million. Speaking at the Voice of the Listener and Viewer conference, he also revealed that it brought 5 million new users to ITVX, so perhaps not a bad investment after all. Well, with me here in the London podcast studios, it's the return of reporter Ella Sagar from The Media Leader. Hello.
Hello.
So it's spring. You can't move for conference at the moment. You had your own last week. How did it go?
Yes, indeed. The Future of Audio and Entertainment on the Thursday, the Future of Brands on the Wednesday. All went well, all very hectic with lots of panels, lots of content left, right and centre, three stages. It was, yeah, it went really well. Over 1,000 people.
Well, I was very kindly invited to be on one of the panels where I was sort of upstaged by a dog.
I saw this.
It has never really happened before, but yes, interesting. We went around the table saying, you know, who you are and what you do. And it got to me and I said, hello, I'm Matt. And as I said that, the dog on the stage turned and looked at me, which got a laugh. And so I had to sort of direct my answer to the dog. And it put me slightly flustered by that, but it was all good.
One of the official pictures of you like stroking the dog while you're also obviously making an excellent point. It was very good.
Why was the dog on stage?
It was a support dog.
Oh, yes. Of course.
And maybe with great media insight, who knows? But another conference event that was happening last night was the Guardian Advertising Awards. Mm-hmm. Any campaigns caught your eye?
I think there were two in particular. There was a Nurofen one called See My Pain, which I think did a lot of work around the inclusivity side of things and making, because obviously pain relief can be taken for many different reasons. Mm. It could be for period pain, it could be for back pain, or any number of people. Mm. So I think that was lauded quite rightly. And then the Google Pixel for its work around Women's World Cup is particularly close to my heart, and it has been had that kind of group sponsorship of the men's and women's tournaments, but I think last year really went all out on that and pushed women's football to the fore a lot more. So
excellent.
That was great to see.
Great. And also welcome to the show for the first time. It's freelance journalist, London correspondent for The Ankler and chair of the Broadcasting Press Guild, Manori Ravindran. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Welcome to the show. It's lovely to see you. Tell us about The Ankler if people don't know.
So The Ankler is sort of set up as kind of a sharp-edged alternative trade to the to the Hollywood trades, of course, where I worked for a number of years. I was international editor at Variety, based in London, obviously. And the Engler is a little bit, what I guess if you sign up, you're not really going to get that rat-a-tat sort of blast of news like every 30 seconds, and which I was very familiar with sending out. It's a bit more focused on opinion, analysis, and that sort of thing. It's more spaced out, really. I mean, I write a column that goes out basically once a week, and it's a lot more focused on the UK and international. And I'm their first international correspondent, so they're trying to do a lot more slowly outside the US, effectively.
That's exciting. How can people sign up?
So it's a newsletter. It's a Substack model, effectively. Mm-hmm. So you can sign up. You can get some free newsletters. If you actually contact me, I've got a little code for like a two-week trial that you can do. But if you do sign up, you'll get the newsletter. You can see like probably the first four graphs of a newsletter, and then... And then that's like the taster, and then you've got to sign up. So it's all through newsletters, effectively.
Great. Well, yeah. Do sign up. Okay, we've been talking about elections for a few weeks. We even had a special about it a couple of weeks ago. But this is very much the time that broadcasters and regulators are getting their houses in order in preparation for the election. And up first, Channel 4 have announced their lineup for election night. Gone is the blend of comedy and entertainment that they've tried a few times. Minori, do you know who's on that lineup?
Yes, well, I'm very exciting, I thought. Emily Maitlis, of course, of Newsagents and Uniformly Newsnight. What I thought was a really interesting addition, the Rest is Politics duo, so Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart. I mean, I'll be watching. I think that's a quite inspired sort of addition. We always knew, I guess, that Goalhanger, which is the parent company of that podcast, would do something big for the election night. But I've got to say, I didn't have this quite on my bingo card.
No, it's quite a tie-up.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And I think they could have maybe done something themselves, perhaps, you know, did a YouTube live stream or something like that. I thought it was interesting Goalhanger got a mention in the press release. So it isn't just Rory and Alistair, it's the show as well. And Ella, I mean, with probably a likely repeat of Ed Balls and George Osborne on ITV. Is this going to be the podcast election?
Yeah, maybe. I think a lot of the broadcasters are taking notice of podcast as a medium. Podcast is moving into cinema now. As it's one podcast is doing a live stream of its event in cinemas around like 400 cinemas across the country. So it seems like podcast is going a bit more traditional, a bit more kind of, and also if people are looking at where people consume news. Podcasting, social media, those sorts of things. It makes sense.
I was talking to somebody at BBC News and they were saying they were quite interested by the Channel 4 announcement as it means their own podcasters might get more of a place on their own election show. Also, interesting, Emily Maitlis, as you mentioned there, is on Newsagents, obviously under contract at Global. Good to see her back on the TV. Do you think she could be tempted back for a more regular TV appearance?
I suppose it's so funny because I remember kind of, so the BBG, we did an event with Goalhanger like 3 months ago, and it was always that thing. I guess it is kind of that question that you ask, like a podcast becomes so successful. It's like, do you go back to the screen or do you go to the screen? Is that like the next iteration of success? Is that what success looks like for a podcast? And it's almost like counterintuitive, isn't it? Because like they're all kind of coming off the screen because they want more freedom on via audio. And then we're like, oh, we're so seeing this migration back. So I'm not sure. I feel like Emily Maitlis is like, she's got her own thing coming out with
she's got her own
video,
TV drama
right?
coming out. Yeah.
Her own kind of side of you know what happened there with Prince Andrew and all the rest of it. I'm not really sure. I feel like she's kind of got the best of both worlds at this point.
And obviously Hugh Edwards departing the BBC. Heard about that this week. Obviously that's going to affect the BBC's lineup on election night.
Yeah. I mean, he was the highest paid reportedly of all of BBC journalists. But the election coverage is not going to look the same at all.
And the May election, so the local elections, are going to be led by Laura Koonsberg. So probably a bit of a test, maybe a test for her, whether she carries over into the proper election as well, I suppose.
Potentially. I think she's got the Sunday morning Laura Koonsberg show, which is I think, doing quite well. But it is always the election is the proof, right? And she's done elections before as political editor and that sort of thing, but maybe not in this kind of headline role.
We will see.
One thing I do want to say, that I have to say, like Channel 4 with this, there's so much has been said about Channel 4. I'm sure we will talk about Channel 4 later in the show as well. But I think that this was a real testament to sort of, I guess just when you think of someone like, I guess, Ian Katz, sort of director mm-hmm. of programming content and whatnot, this really is, I wonder how much you sort of had to, and of course these teams are completely separate. However, given his background with in news, this is really something that where he really shines, you know what I
yes.
mean? And this is something where I look at Channel 4, it's like, ah, finally, this is a win for Channel 4. Yeah. This is good.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall of that meeting where it was first being discussed and how, we want to get these people on, they have their own podcast and all these things, and maybe some people in the room are like, yeah, I listen to that podcast, I love that podcast, and other people you kind of have to bring over, and how that kind of convincing and cajoling happened, or was there any convincing and cajoling and everyone was it unanimous?
And also, if you're Channel 4, it is difficult to beat BBC, ITV and Sky at the election. I mean, they are such established places that you turn on election night. It's difficult for Channel 4 to cut through, and obviously they've tried with comedy shows and different versions over the years.
Well, did you see what Jacob Rees-Mogg had said? Because there was a piece in the Telegraph about supposed or potential left-wing bias of
yes.
this election lineup, and he'd basically said, who cares, nobody watches Channel 4 election night coverage, and what they say after the election doesn't matter, it's impartiality in the run-up to the election that's important, which is of course so rich.
Well, maybe
we're going to talk about
but also, maybe he'll be involved in GB News's coverage. I was talking to someone and I said, obviously there are rules about, you know, election coverage, but at 10 o'clock, when the polls close, if you are a politician, maybe you can just jump on in front of the camera and do your job. So we'll see what they do. Well, connected to that, Ofcom have ruled that Nigel Farage can host his nightly show on GB News during the election period, as long as he doesn't stand for election. Manori, Farage is still a member of Reform UK. He's honorary president. Is it okay to have him involved during the election period?
Well, I guess I suppose all we really need to consider is that screenshot that I've been seeing of him basically sat at a desk at a, you know, with the backdrop and effectively looking very much like a newsreader, right? And so I think Ofcom has a serious problem on its hands in terms of what exactly, what is news, what is current affairs, is this guy a politician? I mean, it's really, I'm not really sure. I feel like the lines are so blurred.
Well, looking at the Ofcom data, the research suggested that viewers think it is news because it has news type things, just as you were saying, backdrops there, it looks like a newsreader in that position, and then they sort of ignored that and went, oh, it's kind of going to be okay, and back to this kind of news current affairs split. I mean, a lot of people, Ella, are saying that kind of Ofcom are in the wrong here.
I think people are saying Ofcom needs to get a backbone. I think Andrew Neil in the House of Lords committee this week was saying, you know, Ofcom does need to get precisely that. And then there is that history of investigations. I think it's 8 investigations are open, and about 12 have been where GB News has been found to have breached the rules. Ofcom says that GB News is working actively with them to bring in more compliance and that sort of thing. But, you know, if you keep on opening investigations, or if there are these kind of question marks of, is it news? And, you know, it's called GB News. And if somewhere a consumer, any person on the street is kind of turning on a news channel, that's kind of what they expect to find. And so that's what my worry and concern is. And when I find it quite jarring, when you see politicians, MPs, sitting MPs interviewing members of their own party about things that are happening at the moment, it does feel quite odd and taking that place of a journalist, when obviously they do have producers and journalists and lots of research goes into the show to make sure that, you know, they're covering all those questions, but it's that need to be questioned. But I don't know how to square it, basically.
I mean, there isn't an element of if you are Ofcom, you're thinking, yeah, the world is changing, media consumption is changing, it is sort of within the rules, it's a little bit of a reading of the rules, or maybe Ofcom just being a bit more actually progressive on this issue than established media folk who are maybe used to some older rules.
Well, I mean, absolutely. You know, in some ways, we've seen the real appetite for sort of opinion-led programming and news, right? I mean, that's why these podcasts are so popular, and why, you know, places like, I remember John Riley, you know, at Sky News basically saying, oh, actually, we do need more of this. People are hungry for analysis and opinion. They want to know what's really going on. And so there is that appetite, but, you know, you really have to balance it. And I agree with you, Ella, like it's very confusing, completely incongruous when you sort of see people side by side. And I actually remember seeing an image and being like, wait, who's interviewing who? Because it's confusing, right? And it's also, I don't know, I just feel as though with kind of what's going on. It's just, there's almost two, it's like Stuart Purvis was saying, right? There's almost like two standards, really, in terms of impartiality. And you're really kind of seeing that play out now, where it's one set of rules for the PSBs and then basically Ofcom saying, oh, well, these guys, you know, audience expectations are different, the size is different, so they can play by another set of rules.
Well, it's not all good news at GB News, because this week they announced redundancies, 40 jobs are to go. This comes, as mentioned, Andrew Neil told a House of Lords Select Committee that the station is sort of unsustainable. But Ella, is it unsustainable? If some dudes want to keep spending some money on it, then it'll carry on?
I mean, that's the question, where how much more money can they put into it? I mean, it was always kind of compared or alongside Talk TV, which has gone online only. And that obviously has News UK behind it and lots, presumably like a bit more, it's kind of tied to other media properties. And I think when GB News started, I was actually at journalism school at the time, and we had someone come in and speak to us, and it had launched 3 days previously. And she was talking to us about what it was like launching a TV station. Very exciting. And it was wanting to speak outside of London to more people and that kind of proposition. There was obviously the where it was going to sit politically. But it does depend on where the funding comes from and when the taps get turned off.
Right. Now, this week saw the annual Creative Cities Convention. This is an event for the media industry to celebrate creatives outside of London. And this year it was in Bristol. We were there, and we'll share a few of the interviews and insights we gleaned in a moment. But a couple of stories to talk about first. Ella, Alex Mann told delegates that Channel 4 will start making shows outside of England. It's currently around 9%. Do we know where they want to get to?
I'm not entirely sure on that one, but I know that a lot of the, you know, BBC studios that has a big international focus with BritBox, for example. So you wonder if, in the context of that Channel 4 is wanting to move into that direction.
The BBC is sort of 16% outside of England. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're a producer in the UK feeling the pinch, the advice is to head to America. That's the advice of the bosses of ITV Studios and TV Indie Plimsoll. Minori, international is becoming more and more key to TV commissioning here in the UK. I guess sort of what they're saying is you need to get the cash from the outside to guarantee a commission inside the country.
I mean, I sort of had to laugh when I saw that in terms of what Grant Mansfield had said, because we have to really consider the source here in terms of Grant and Plimsoll and what specifically Plimsoll does. Plimsoll Productions is primarily a natural history producer. And they, to be fair to them, they have been extremely smart in, you know, they basically went and set up shop in the US and properly had somebody there really kind of fostering those relationships. And that's what you need, really. You need somebody on the ground in America, in LA specifically, to be going to the streamers, to be going and just constantly having meetings and whatnot. And so Plimsoll did that. But also the US doesn't really have a natural history sort of production legacy in the same way that the UK does. And so what Plimsoll, they're very, you know, that's what they do is really valuable in the US. They don't need to necessarily come over here and sort of talk to somebody, like, you know, they can speak to Plimsoll in the US. And so I think Plimsoll has done that really right. But I think for him to sort of say, oh, America is open to British producers. I mean, they're going through a really tough time over there as well, right? Like, this is an industry sort of kind of freezing period, kind of downturn. And so I'm not really sure we can say, oh, yeah, definitely just go to the US and you'll be fine. I do feel as though a lot of British producers, and I noticed this because I moved here about 8 years ago, so I was an international editor at Broadcast, and I remember kind of thinking, wow, a lot of the producers here are really focused on, you know, the big five kind of broadcasters. Like, they're not, I noticed that many of them, there were some smart ones, of course, who would look outside of the UK and be on a lot of the PAC delegations and whatnot. But so many people have been so focused inwardly. And I think obviously now when you see that commissioning downturn happening, and, you know, some indies are really, really pinched, but I don't think there's any safety. I mean, if you look at Zigzag Productions, right, which is run by Danny Fenton, I mean, Danny was on every single delegation, going to China, going to Miami, wherever. Like, he was really on the front foot in terms of looking outside the UK for commissions, and, you know, they're having to wind the company down, basically. So I don't know. I think it's just I don't think it's right to say, oh, America's open for business.
I saw Kevin Ligo speak this week at the VLV conference, and he was talking about Mr. Bates and other shows. And he gave some quite interesting numbers about ITV drama. And he said The cheaper end is about £1.5 million an hour, up to around sort of £2.5 million an hour. And at ITV, they would sort of go up to about £1 million an hour. So if you want to make some drama for ITV, you need to go and find at least £500,000 an episode from someone, maybe £1.5 million per episode, before you even then kind of break even with ITV's money. I mean, that's a challenge for UK producers to rethink their model, and just they've got to stop just talking to the people they've always talked to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the challenge is that it's not a problem that's faced by the big social media platforms, which all have user-generated content and where people are increasingly spending their time. So that is the difficulty that broadcast or commissioners, producers find themselves in. And that it's that kind of quality content that you do want to see more of. And so you'll see that maybe, I think I heard at one of our conferences that going forward, there's just going to be less content because it is just so much more expensive to produce, but that hopefully should produce a bit more of a kind of scarcity value and I write about advertising, so and more value for advertisers, but we'll see what happens.
Okay, now over to Bristol, where we sent the media podcast's Ollie Pitt to see what he could glean from the convention floor. We start with historian and broadcaster David Olusoga.
There is a cultural arrogance about London and television. There is a phrase that you still hear, which I think is a really unfortunate phrase. People will talk about London producers as if they were a different species, as if they had a skill set that was higher, more sophisticated than anybody else. And that mindset still exists. And it's a bit quieter these days. People don't say it as openly as they do. But the idea that people outside of London really don't quite match up, I think that's still there within the culture of television, and it needs to be broken, quite simply because it's not true and it's damaging.
As a broadcaster, how are you finding the industry at the moment? There's a lot of production companies that are finding it particularly difficult getting commissions, but as a talent, I would imagine much sought after. How are you finding it at the moment with programme making?
Well, I'm watching the industry I care about. I'm watching friends and colleagues really struggling. I work outside of television. Television's not the only thing I do, so in some ways it's easier for me. But it's really hard to watch an industry I care about going through times as tough as this. And I've been in the industry a long time. I've been through the 2008-2012 recession. This feels very different. This feels more like a correction, and I think it's more damaging. And what I'm going to talk about later is what I really fear and what I think the work done by Sky News and Beck2 is already indicating, which just as last time, the people who we will lose are people from minority communities and people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds. That's what happened last time, and I fear that's exactly what's happening now. A lot of the progress that we made in 2020 about diversity, we're a couple of hundred metres away from the statue of Edward Colston where that stood. A lot of the change we've seen in terms of ethnic and socioeconomic diversity and disability, I fear a lot of that is evaporating, and we'll only really notice that when the waters recede and we see the damage.
The landscape of the industry has changed an awful lot, particularly even over the last five or ten years. As a personality, how have you adapted to that individually, like taking on the digital side of things and social media and that kind of thing? Have you had to change the way that you approach various projects because of it, or do you still do it as you did when you first made your first show back as at the age of 27?
That's a good question. I'm sure historians aren't the most up-to-date people. I spend most of my time thinking about the 18th century. I love social media. I think it's really valuable. I think it increases our voice. I'm very interested in working in other medium. And as I said, I don't just work in television. So I'm always comparing television with other forms and the cultures of other industries. The one thing about me is that I'm monomaniacal about history. Almost everything that I do is history. I just want to do it in as many places as possible. But TV history was what made me want to be an historian. So this is, in a way, probably a grand word, but somewhat sacred to me, making sure that we can still talk about the world of history and our remarkable past using this medium.
We're going to go through a huge potential political change this year globally. When those kind of monumental shifts happen, it can often change industry. How do you think that would affect the media industry with the changes that we're going to see across the world at the moment, and also the conflicts that are happening around the world?
This moment we're living in, with conflicts all over the world, with more people going to the polls than ever in human history, I think the challenge is obvious, is that we need to fight for verifiable truth. Tim Davies said this about the BBC in his announcement a few weeks ago. I think our task is very, very clear. There's an erosion of truth, of shared, accepted reality. And this is the most powerful medium still. Very sorry to say that to people who believe television is dead or television is over. This is still a place that people go to be shown their world, to share stories. And I think our responsibilities are greater than ever.
That was David Olesoga. I also caught up with Laura Mansfield, who is the newly appointed CEO of Screen Skills, who I also spoke to about the commissioning slowdown in Factual.
I think the thing is that there are always opportunities and there are always challenges. So, you know, I mean, I've been working in this industry for 30 years and we've seen real ups and downs and sideways, and it's really constantly changing. So we have a landscape right now where at this moment, precisely, I think there are some really quite extreme challenges in unscripted, but there are some really huge opportunities in scripted. But even within that, there are pockets of development and real pockets of exciting growth. I think the broader trends are that we are in a global market, and I think the companies and the individuals that recognise that are, you know, putting themselves one step ahead. But it is a very, very tough time, and it's not universally tough. So I think our job as an industry is to look at where are the areas where support's really needed, and how do we, for example, in the areas of diversity and inclusion, make sure that, or try and make sure that the real positive gains that have been happening over the past few years, that, you know, it's not a case of one step forward, two steps back, that we can try and support that ongoing progress and help people understand where there are opportunities, how they might be able to skill up, how they might be able to build personal resourcefulness. But I mean, fundamentally, you need to have it all together. It's all very well someone, you know, training on its own isn't going to do anything. Yeah. This is about jobs. This is about, you know, learning how to create opportunities. I mean, becoming a freelancer is, in a way, starting to regard yourself as your own micro business. And that's a mindset shift necessarily, in terms of thinking about getting a job is as much of a job as doing the job.
Yes.
So equipping people with those kind of resourceful skills is very useful, whatever climate we're in and however much things change and evolve.
Well, just on back on the diversity and inclusion, actually, because, I mean, traditionally it's been an industry where, not always, not exclusively, but where to get into it you have either had to go and do some kind of internship, unpaid often, you know, bank of mum and dad. We've heard these stories. They're in the industry, left, right and centre. I know there have been inroads in trying to change that, but what has changed, or what are you hoping to change to reach those people that might not have previously had those opportunities within the industry?
I mean, I really do feel sort of, you know, I think a lot has changed, and I think there's a lot of will and a lot of want to continue to change things. And I think, first of all, it's about articulating the problem, and it's not just ethnic minority diversity, it's also class diversity is a big problem. So first of all, it's about labelling it. Second of all, it's about doing something about it and recognising that, for example, pathways like apprenticeships offer really meaningful, much broader access than the sort of traditional who do you know, pick up the phone. It's also about things like broader recruitment processes. And that's where I go back to leadership and management, is actually the more that people know how to, that, you know, they should advertise, you know, building beyond kind of closed networks to openly advertising, understanding how to structure an interview fairly to give someone who might not look like you the best chance of progressing. So it's a whole suite of different things and different interventions. I mean, certainly in terms of Screen Skills, in terms of what we're doing now across the funds, we offer a whole range of progression programs like Trainee Finder, where, you know, people who might not come from those traditional backgrounds are offered pathways into the industry, and those are paid. So that's a really important thing. As we look forward, we've just announced this fabulous new partnership with Adobe Foundation. This is their first one in the UK, and they're very keen to help improve diversity and inclusion globally. They're giving us $250,000 to help boost some of the range of programs that we're doing, particularly about that sort of entry piece. So the Unscripted Fund are going to be accessing some funding to adopt a program similar to the HETV one that we do about a first break. So again, giving people from, you know, backgrounds that might not typically think, oh yes, television or film is for me, a sample of what getting into the industry might look like, as well as mentorships, workshops, and so on. So it's about a kind of a range of different interventions. That's what we're doing with the Adobe investment, but that's what the funds are doing across the piece. And really that's where, as an industry, the crucial thing is for us all to work together. No one is going to solve this on their own, but certainly I don't think we can, any of us, be at all complacent, because, you know, overall, when you look round the rooms are still pretty hideously white.
And just finally, actually, just to end on this, I mean, we can dwell on the doom and gloom, but is there anything that you're kind of excited about coming up in the next 12 months that we should all be getting excited about?
I'm always excited about the creativity that producers, that freelancers, that broadcasters, streamers, that the whole ecosystem shows. For all the challenges, exciting things happen. You know, you only have to turn on your telly or go to the cinema or play a game to see that there's massive creativity coming out. And sometimes from challenging times, from uncertain times, new mashups come out of things that you aren't expecting. So I think, you know, games and those games engines, VFX, those different kinds of technologies, using them in unexpected ways and cross-genre is really exciting. And it challenges all of us to step out of our kind of categorization of how we've traditionally done things, not just Screen Skills, but other organizations too. And it forces us to think, how can we play? How can we be more imaginative in terms of what we put together? So I think the UK is a pretty amazing place to be a creative. And yes, it's tough, but I think if we pull together, we can get through this.
Thanks to Laura Mansfield and David Olusoga. There's even more chat from the events, which we've put up over on our Patreon. It's a great way to support the show, which we make every week totally independently. If you appreciate us going outside of the M25, for example, maybe thirst the cost of a train ticket, single or return, up to you. Just head to patreon.com/mediapod. That's patreon.com/mediapod. Right, so we'll be back with some radio changes after this.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back. Manori and Ella are back to round up a couple of radio stories. Some changes at Radio 2 Challenger Boom Radio, who've announced some schedule changes and a new ad campaign. Ella, what are they up to?
So Boom Radio, I think, is such an amazing proposition. They started out about just over 2 years ago, and it was a radio station started by boomers for boomers. And I was speaking to Phil Riley, actually, the CEO. And so they're launching a big new marketing campaign, big TV campaign. It's their largest ever marketing campaign, about £500,000, TV, out of home.
Which is a lot of money for a startup.
And I was saying this, asking, oh, so why such a big marketing push now? And also bringing Joe Brand into the fold as well as a presenter. And Phil Riley told me, he was like, well, we do, when we're making a profit, we want to reinvest all of that into marketing. But this year in particular, we've now got to a big enough size and we've got enough money in the bank that we can actually put more, I think his words were, more effort and more money into marketing and really push that forward. They spent, I think, the whole of most of Q1 kind of preparing the TV ad. And so I think the fact that they can keep that campaign going for 2 months as well is really a sign that they are wanting to keep growing their audience. And they are aware that BBC are launching spin-off radio station that is partially aimed at their target audience. I think Phil Riley described that as, you know, that's a battle for another day. We're just, yeah.
Well, it's a really nice piece of creative. The TV ad is a lady, a kind of target audience, a listener talking about going to a Beatles concert for the first time. And they have found video and imagery of her at that concert.
Yeah.
And it's lovely. And it really does position them exactly where they need to be. Also, what's interesting is they're moving some of their spend. They have done some TV in the past, kind of more on the kind of ITV3 ends of things. Mm-hmm. But they're putting some spots on ITV1 as well.
Yeah, for the first time. Yeah,
yeah, it's quite a leap to do all of that.
Yeah, and they're doing quite a few different channels as well, a bit of a mix, and going after some areas where they might have certain music stations or history stations, that sort of thing, heritage stations that do that kind of content. So and I think the media was planned by Media Lab, and so I found that quite interesting to find out where they're placing those ads. And yeah, the creative, again, we don't really talk about the creative on my side of things, but I really loved it. And it was also, you know, her kind of Beatles concert is as a teenager, and it was the listener really at the heart of it. Which I think sometimes can get a bit lost when you're talking, you are still talking one-on-one when you're radio most of the time, and that was really captured.
And it definitely does that. I was talking to Phil a little while ago, and he has an interesting background because he set up Heart originally and Galaxy, and he relaunched LBC. So very sort of solid radio experience. And I said, oh, what's the difference between running those big brands of the past and now running this one, and particularly on marketing? And he was saying sort of old days, you do a TV ad and it's sort of on ITV or maybe a bit of Channel 4. It's very, very expensive. You can't be particularly that targeted other than some shows. Whereas now you can be, you know, picking those channels that you were talking about. They do quite a lot of social media advertising. You kind of think 60 plus is really social media, but a lot of people on Facebook.
Yeah, very, that's what you said.
Very targetable. And it just shows kind of the flexibility, doesn't it, that you can, that these new media operators can pick and choose to reach their audiences.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, social media is, when you kind of, just going back to what we were talking about before in terms of GB News, if you look at the results, right, like that's, the ratings are absolutely in the toilet and they're losing money. But like, look at the social media reach, yeah. Like that's what they're really leveraging. And so, yeah, social is nothing to...
Worry about. More radio news. Virgin Radio, this is News UK, Virgin Radio have a new weekend lineup. Angela Scanlon is joining the station. Again, a Radio 2 name that covered some weekends on occasion, I think. She's not a bad fit for Virgin, is she?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's, again, there's a bit of a trend of BBC Radio talent moving over to commercial. I mean, we've had Jordan North move over to Capital Breakfast and that sort of thing a bit earlier. So yeah, that seems like a good addition, and we'll see how that all kind of pans out. And it's always interesting to see the radars and when people move stations, and if there is a bit of a carryover. Like last year with Ken Bruce was an absolutely huge, like he took so much of that BBC Radio 2 audience with him.
And the other change is on talk radio. So this is a little bit of talk TV being wound down a little bit, or being sort of moving the money. It was sort of a lot based on a lot of talk radio output. So the shiny stuff sort of went on the evenings on the telly, but that still got broadcast on the radio. And now the radio station has had to reorient itself a little bit and cope with that change. So we're seeing Vanessa Feltz leave, and I imagine she was probably quite an expensive person on Talk Radio, Talk TV, and they've rejigged the lineup. Do you think that's likely to affect Talk Radio significantly?
I think Vanessa Feltz was definitely a name on that and an attraction, and you do get that bond with your hosts, and so there might be, but it's hard to say, and it depends on how the new lineup does. And so, yeah, she was definitely someone to watch out. I'd be interested to see where she goes next.
Yeah, so she was Radio 2, BBC London, and then sort of took the big money to move to Talk TV and Talk Radio. So it'd be interesting to see if she pops up. And they've moved Mike Graham, who was quite a sort of legacy Talk Radio presenter, back to Breakfast when the TV side isn't as important for them anymore. Mm. And he's maybe not a TV face, but can do a decent job on the radio. So we'll see how that does. But a lot of changes, and also quite a lot of changes for them over the last year. I mean, radio works really well when you've got kind of heritage and familiarity. If you kind of move away from that, listeners don't really like it. I think isn't that a challenge, Minori, for lots of things where you've got to kind of reach consumers, they've got to really understand your brand, really understand what you're doing, because they've got a lot of other choices.
100%. I mean, brand is completely is everything right now, and people, I think that's really the problem. You see a lot of streamers launching where it's these amorphous sort of brand, you know, anything, you know, you see the slate effectively, and it's that could be easily sit on something else. You see a Paramount Plus show and it's like, well, what's the difference between this and something on Netflix or Prime Video or whatever it is? And so I think right now for anyone, any sort of new player or new startup, whatever it is, brand is just paramount. Sorry. Brand is paramount.
Yeah. Especially for Paramount Plus. Right, time for the media quiz, which apparently is David Olusoga's favourite part of the show. So especially for him, here we go. This week it's entitled Coming to America. This is the game where you try to deduce the British format or talent that is coming to America from my cryptic question. And it says here, generic American accent. I'm not doing a generic one. We've got a real North American accent here.
There you go.
Right. So buzz in with your name if you know the answer. So Ella, you will say.
Ella.
And Minori, you will say.
Minori.
Let's play Coming to America. So question number one, which spin-off format is Anthony Scaramucci hosting for America?
Minori.
Correct. You don't have to put your hand up.
Okay, right. Sorry.
You're
sorry.
Good. What's the answer?
Rest is Politics, US.
This is, yes, the Rest is Politics, US. This is the Goalhanger production. They've been looking for the right talent for a while, it seems. Do you think he's going to be the right fit?
I think he will,
same
actually.
Same as Katty Kay, who's the kind of BBC North America
That's
correspondent.
That's right, yeah, the mooch. I mean, I have to say, I remember Tony telling me about this a little while ago, and I had a little bit of an inside track on this. However, I know that the mooches... probably should say Anthony. Anthony's, he was on Leading, wasn't he? Basically,
yes, and one of the other podcasts.
That's right, and that was excellent. I think he did a really good job. And
he's a very listenable person.
He is. He really is. And I think he's kind of had a little bit of a capital J journey himself. And so, bravo! I think that's a great fit.
So a lot of things are judged in American politics now in Scaramucci's. So like how long he lasted as the press secretary. So hopefully he will last a number of Scaramucci's on this show.
Long may he mooch.
Yes. And do you think, Ella, this has got the chance to be as strong as Rest is Politics UK?
I think it is one of the tough things where the UK Rest is Politics is so well loved amongst so many people that it will be a tough act to follow. I do think it does remind me of, you know, how PodSave the US, Crooked Media moved over, PodSave the UK. Oh, okay, they've got Nish Kumar, they've got Coco Khan, comedian and Guardian journalist respectively. How's that going to do? And I think it is that it's sometimes a bit of a slow burn and sometimes it's like a huge spike in like, oh yeah, let's... I think for this one, I think he'll bring that kind of fireworks I don't think there won't be a boring episode for sure.
I think quite often some of these podcasts work where there's real expertise. And if you listen to The Rest is Politics UK, both of them have good experience. And you see, you know, when I met this president or when I was in China, which is better, I think, often than just having commentators go, what about China this week? And he obviously has a lot of connection with the Republican Party in the US. Kati, less of an insider, do you think she'll be a good balance to him?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I don't know so much about Kati Kaye. However, I do, just in terms of the point about being an insider, I think again, this is what we call lived experience, which is, of course, so important in so many parts of media, but certainly in terms of podcasting as well, right? It's really hard to argue with someone when they actually have, you know, they've been there, they've been in the room, they've been at the table. And so that provides such an interesting sort of viewpoint. It's just a matter of like how much they can really kind of go there, just as journalists do, right? So,
America launched there. Someone else who's off to America is Joe Lycett. So question number two, what is Joe Lycett up to in America?
Ella. He's going to all of the different Birminghams, or maybe not all of them. I think that would take quite a long time, but several of the Birminghams in the US.
He's off to 18 different Birminghams.
No, so you had it, Manuri.
the one figure I had in my mind.
Doing a kind of travel man style series, we think. I mean, Joe Lycett is enjoying quite a purple patch at the moment.
He is, yeah. He's, he's confusing
late
a whole
night
lot of
show
late and, night show, confusing and, journalists, yeah. And sort of making our lives more difficult.
Changing his name. I adore Joe Lycett, and I think he did an interview, it was with on podcast with Gary Lineker, and with a very provocative title, and then it ended up being about the whole sewage situation in the UK. And I think he does know what goes viral, and he's very good. He's also, yeah, I think he's an excellent presenter.
We'll see how he does in all the Birminghams. Right, so question number three. What do Helen Mirren, Piers Brosnan and Ben Kingsley have in common this week?
Ella?
Yes.
Are they all going to be in the cast for a new show, for the book of Thursday Murder Club?
Yes, the film of the book.
The film of the book.
This is Richard Osman, Rest Entertainment presenter Richard Osman. The first people have been announced, but not the lead yet. Mm. So apparently the lead is still in discussion.
Helen Mirren is not the lead.
No.
Wow.
So I think we find out later on, maybe next week, who the lead will be. But that's not a bad cast, though, is it, already for a big new show? Richard Osman must be over the moon and ready to count the cash.
He's already got, what, 4 best-selling books now? Mm. So I think he's already doing pretty well for himself.
Yes. Free marketing via Russ's Entertainment.
Yes, they're very good for that as well. That makes Ella our winner today. Congratulations.
Well done.
Very, very good. And as a prize, you'll be devising our impartiality rules about the election.
Yay.
Okay. Okay. Podcast, very important. Please report back soon. Thank you very much. My thanks to Manuri and Ella. Where can listeners keep up on your work, Ella?
So I'm the audio and out-of-home reporter on The Media Leader. We have a website, themedialeader.com. Got a newsletter as well and a podcast. If you type in The Media Leader and any of those things, I'm sure that you'll find us.
Where you're listening to this one. And Manuri, how can people keep up with your good work?
Yeah, thank you. They can subscribe to The Angler. They can also find me in Broadcast and Screen International. A few different outlets.
Excellent. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. Remember, there's 25% off your first booking at the London Podcast Studios, where we record our show every week. Just use the code MEDIAPOD when you head to thelondonpodcaststudios.com. For 25% off, use the code MEDIAPOD. If you're new to the show, remember to hit follow in your podcast app of choice. That way you get a new episode every week. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, with support from Ollie Pitt. It was a Rethink Audio production, and I'll see you next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, on Monday, it's the anniversary of the table knife being invented.
On Tuesday, we explain how the tradition of the two-minute silence originated in Cape Town.
On Wednesday, we recall the day King George III proved he was assassin-proof.
On Thursday, let's all eat cake. It's Marie Antoinette's wedding.
And on Friday, we discover how Buffalo Bill helped invent the Wild West.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the Retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.